Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, my friends, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm Eric Peabody, the usual bag of bones hanging around the hill, but I've actually had some company recently. You managed to just miss him, but I suspect he'll be back sometime. Actually, he seems to keep showing up. Luckily for you, we have a story tonight that'll get you up to speed on my good friend, the Drifter. Written by James Flynn, we follow a group of young Brits as they travel through Southeast Asia filming a documentary. The subject of the documentary is, you guessed it, the Drifter, a mysterious figure that has shown up in odd places over a number of years. No one has ever gotten a good look at him, only describing him as being a tall, thin shadow wearing a wide-brimmed hat. Now, our intrepid young film crew is closing in on the place of the last sighting, and they might just be biting off more than they can chew. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author James Flynn, I give you The Drifter. There was an urban legend about a wandering man. He roamed the many countries, adrift without a plan. Where he came from, no one knew, his origin obscure, but his presence caused a stir. The fear of him was pure. They tried to go and find him, the infamous Enigma, to see him in the flesh, the one they called the Drifter. They were basically a bunch of amateurs with some rented equipment, way out of their depth, and they knew it. Navigating their way across southern Vietnam in the rumbling 4x4, cameras and emergency gear bundled all around them, they couldn't help feeling like a bunch of frauds. There were three of them, Josh, Dennis, and Lance. Josh was the unofficial leader, the one who'd put this insane plan together, the one who was crazy enough to have actually come up with the idea in the first place. They were making a low-budget documentary, traveling around Southeast Asia gathering footage, and even after 2 months into the project, none of them could believe that they were actually doing it. laying down the money for the plane tickets, cameras, shipping fees, hotels, hired vehicles, and all of the other unexpected costs associated with the project had been brave, or stupid, enough. But the actual subject of the documentary itself was arguably even braver. Possible names upon release included The Search for the Drifter, The Hunt for the Drifter, and The Man That Time Forgot. If you were to mention the name Drifter to most members of the general public, you'd most likely get a blank expression. Either that, or people would perhaps think you were talking about some kind of chocolate bar. Mention it in a pub, and someone might think that you were referring to a new sports car. But if you were to mention the name whilst in the company of certain niche circles, however, people who were inclined to spend vast amounts of their time scouring the internet in a darkened bedroom binging strange videos, it would trigger a look of knowing recognition as an icy chill ran up their spines. The legend of the Drifter went back for generations. Hearsay and old wives' tales of a wandering, timeless man had been in circulation around the globe for decades and beyond. But with the advent of cameras in the 19th century, followed by the ubiquitous rise of smartphones in the 21st, there was now a sizable amount of photographic and digital evidence to back up these ancient tales. Nobody really knew anything about the Drifter, but that certainly didn't stop people from speculating. Some people claimed that he was the ghost of an escapee from a lunatic asylum. Others claimed that he was a government spy. Certain researchers and investigators swore that he was the result of a botched laboratory experiment, whereas some believed that he was a robot or a cyborg. And, if one cared to comb through special forums for long enough, they would find posts claiming that the Drifter was actually Elvis or D.B. Cooper. The first photograph of the Drifter surfaced all the way back in 1892. To describe the picture as being grainy would be an understatement. Shot out on the Yorkshire moors in the north of England by a dog walker, the black and white image showed a spindly figure strolling along in the middle distance, surrounded by grassy slopes. The thing that led many people to believe that this hazy figure was the Drifter was the distinct shape of a wide hat upon his head. Most of the tales and legends surrounding the Drifter included descriptions of a wide black hat, something like a fedora or a warped cowboy hat, along with the rest of his black attire. Other photos popped up here and there during the first half of the 20th century, but the turning point for most people was a video clip that emerged in 1984. Shot on a family camcorder in a rural hillside area in Tenerife, the recording showed a tall, gaunt figure traipsing across a sandy, cactus-infested field adjacent to a disused industrial estate. Despite only being about 20 seconds long, the clip clearly displayed a figure which strongly resembled the standard description of the Drifter, reigniting the ancient legend for a new generation of curious, impressionable minds. And since the famous Tenerife clip, there had been others uploaded onto the internet, originating from all four corners of the globe. Teenagers exploring a deserted airbase in Russia uploaded a brief clip in 2007 of a darkly dressed man loitering near a metal hangar. Backpackers in Japan uploaded a video of a wandering beast walking through a forest in 2010. Some shaky footage from Turkey in 2013 showed a hatted man walking along a rocky shoreline. And in 2018, a clip surfaced in Cambodia showing a disturbing figure shuffling through the remains of an old temple on the periphery of Phnom Penh. For some, the most disturbing aspect of all of these photos and video clips was the way that the Drifter moved and carried himself. A common thread among all of the separate sightings was the lethargic, drained movements of his gangly limbs, like some kind of slow-mo button had been pressed. A certain graininess or haziness seemed to be present on every picture and video of the Drifter, but it couldn't always be explained by crude camera equipment or bad weather. Eyewitnesses sometimes described a difficulty focusing on the man, like an invisible film covered his ragged clothing and lofty physique. The team's last port of call had been Phnom Penh, where they'd managed to gather some half-decent footage of the temple where the drifter had been spotted, plus a few brief interview clips of local tuk-tuk drivers explaining how they'd seen a strange foreigner walking along the shore of the Mekong River for a few weeks before he suddenly vanished, never to be seen again. The newest sighting of all, however, had occurred just 3 months ago, and it had been in a semi-rural area in Vietnam. Hence, the reason Josh and his team were now driving through the outskirts of Saigon in the sweaty afternoon heat. The Vietnamese roads had been chaotic and hectic since they'd left the car rental lot, packed with mopeds, motorbikes, and speeding buses that stopped for no one. Families of three or four rushed past on all sides, all on one bike, along with delivery drivers carrying stacks of unsecured boxes behind them on the seat. They were traveling along a road called Duong Me Kok, a long pothole-ridden stretch that ran parallel to the Ken Tao Hu River in District 8. The latest sighting had been witnessed and filmed by a local man to the area known as Chu Duc, and after some correspondence online with his English-speaking daughter, the man and his family had agreed to show them the original footage, as well as answer any questions they had. "This is it," said Josh, sitting in the passenger seat and looking down at the map app on his phone. "Take this turn here." Dennis, who was sitting behind the steering wheel, covered in sweat and dust, nervously steered the vehicle across the never-ending tide of mopeds and motorbikes, taking a small slip road that ran beside a concrete bridge. Lance, the youngest of the three of them, was in the back of the vehicle, trying unsuccessfully to insert a new battery into one of the cameras. After a couple of sharp turns, they found themselves driving down a narrow alleyway with rows of colorful houses on either side and low-hanging electrical wires dangling from wooden posts that threatened to snag the roof of the car. For a moment, they all thought that they'd taken a wrong turn, but up ahead, a small cluster of locals came into view, waving them over to a sliding metal gate on the right-hand side. "Hello," said a young woman as they climbed out of the car. She was about mid-twenties, long black hair flowing down either side of her smooth face, with a floral dress covering her slim body. Her English was broken, but intelligible. "Hello," said Josh. "Nice to meet you. You must be Ngun."
"Yes, yes," she smiled. "And this is my father, Doc."
Doc was a friendly-looking man of roughly middle age. A large grin seemed to be constantly present on his weathered features, and a semi-casual collared shirt hung from his thin shoulders.
"Please, come inside," said Ngun,
waving a hand towards a blue house with a corrugated roof which formed part of a mini neighborhood. They all went inside the house, watched closely by an assortment of neighbors who sat on their doorsteps or lay in hammocks. Once inside the main living room, they sat themselves down on the tiled floor and were brought a tray of fresh spring rolls and iced tea from a woman who Josh guessed was Duck's wife. "Kam mun," said Josh to the woman, reeling off one of the survival phrases he'd memorized during the plane journey over.
"My father, he fish by the river," said Ngun,
sitting opposite them all.
"He saw a strange man by the old hospital, and he film."
Most of the details were already known to Josh, and he'd even seen a small section of the video already, but he nodded and listened politely as the girl spoke.
"The man, he walk around one of the old buildings, but my father filmed him for a while."
"How do you know who he was?"
"I show video to one of my friends, and she told me that he's the ghost. After that, I put video online."
"But how did your father know? Why did he film him in the first place?"
"The ghost is famous here," said Ngun,
running a hand through her glossy black hair.
"After people see it in Cambodia, it famous here."
Ghost, thought Josh. He'd been wondering how the drifter would be perceived in Vietnam, and now he knew.
"Can we see the video?" he said at last.
"Yes, you can see,"
said Ngun, turning her amiable gaze towards her father, who then rose to his feet and retrieved his mobile phone from the armrest of a lacquered wooden sofa. The grin on her father's face widened and morphed into a smile of genuine excitement as his fingers swiped the device's screen, eagerly searching for the infamous video that had gone viral on certain websites. The phone was then passed over to Josh, and his two companions leaned closer to him, itching to see the full footage in its entirety.
The first thing they saw on the small screen was a shaky view of the Kentauhu River. After a few seconds, the shakiness leveled out and a crumbling building came into view over on the opposite bank. For a while, nothing happened and nobody was to be seen. An excited mumbling could be heard from behind the camera, presumably from Duck, but the dusty landscape was empty apart from a couple of stray dogs hobbling about. But then, like a wiry apparition entering the frame from another dimension, the unmistakable outline of the Drifter came into view. His slow, fuzzy form undulated across the dirt and gravel like a dark snake standing upright, the blacked-out windows of the old hospital serving as a macabre backdrop to his unsettling gait. "That's him, all right," Josh muttered, squinting down at the section of unseen footage with keen, borderline obsessive focus. In line with the several other videos of the Drifter, the black-clad figure appeared to be completely oblivious or indifferent to the fact that he was being filmed, heading towards some unknown destination off-screen with his long steps. He eventually disappeared around the back of one of the dilapidated hospital buildings, his mirage-like outline merging into the simmering heat waves of the sun-beaten vista. Josh handed the phone back to Duck and thanked him. Then he turned to the young woman. "We'd like to interview your father on film as part of our documentary. Would you be able to act as an interpreter? Your voice will go over the top of his when it's broadcast." "Yes, I help you," she said, her deep brown eyes lighting up with curiosity. "That's fine." Looking over at both of his comrades, Josh said, "Let's do this." If the neighbors within the small congregation of houses had been secretly curious about Josh and his team when they first arrived, they were now not even bothering to hide it. A wall of onlookers huddled around the open doorway of the house as Josh interviewed Duck in front of a chunky, tripod-mounted video camera, the lighting made dramatic with the help of a couple of strategically placed lamps and mirrors. The interview lasted for around 10 minutes, and they all knew that the intense scene would add a considerable amount of value to the documentary once it was released. Duck was very open to all of the questions that were put forward to him about his encounter with the Drifter, and his daughter Nagun translated his answers very well. Once it was all over, Josh had just one more question for the man. "Can you take us there?" he asked, in his friendliest tone. Nagun leaned over to her father and whispered a few words into his ear. When he nodded in response, the whole team felt butterflies in their stomachs. The most important stage of the documentary was about to be put into motion.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
They were back in the 4x4, rumbling along the Riverside Highway, this time accompanied by Duck and Nagun. Dennis was driving, following translated directions from Nagun as she leaned over the back of his seat. There was a tense, nervous atmosphere in the car as they made their way through the quiet town, as though they were driving into the arms of a beast that lurked just out of sight. It didn't take too long to find the old hospital, around 20 minutes or so passing tiny food outlets and empty coffee shops, but when they arrived, they were far from relieved. Worried, disappointed looks were present on all of their faces as they parked the car and took in the sight before them, their hopes emptying away. It wasn't the unsettling eeriness of the old medical facility that drained their spirits, nor was it the unbearable heat that showed no sign of easing off. It was the 10-foot-high barbed wire fence that menacingly loomed before them. "What the hell is this?" grumbled Josh, squinting up at the long steel fence with despair seeping into him. Nagun came up beside him, sensing his confusion and worry. "Maybe it's police fence," she said, and after an awkward silence, she added, "I don't know when they did it." Things had been going relatively well so far. They had some pretty good footage and interviews to use, all filmed on location, but the success of the project ultimately rested on Josh getting some close-up shots of the hospital. Even if he didn't manage to get an exclusive clip of the Drifter himself, the show could still do well, but at the very least, he had to get into the derelict hospital and film some of the interior. This latest video clip of the drifter in Vietnam was rapidly becoming the most famous one of all, and exploring the building for the documentary was of paramount importance. This realization, along with the searing afternoon heat, was grating away at Josh.
"Well, that's just great, isn't it?"
he fumed, finally giving in to his irritation.
"How are we supposed to get in there now?"
Dennis and Lance were short of ideas, the vast array of anti-trespassing signs and tall steel posts stunning them into silence. They were both avoiding Josh's gaze, but after a few moments, Dennis cleared his throat and came up with a suggestion.
"We'll have to just get some shots of the exterior and then maybe add some commentary over the top of it."
"Shots of the exterior," sighed Josh. "You think I've come all the way out here just to get some shots of the exterior? You can't even see the bloody exterior anyway. It's 50 meters away and obscured by that poxy fence."
"Well, I'm sorry, Josh. What am I supposed to say? I was just..."
"Okay, okay. I'm sorry," said Josh, taking a few deep breaths. "I'm just getting stressed right now."
He wiped some sweat from his brow, then turned towards Nagun and her father, who were standing by the car.
"Nagun, what'll happen if we go in there?"
"You mean go through the fence?"
"Yes."
Sweeping a strand of charcoal black hair from her forehead, she looked over towards the metal barrier with unease.
"I don't think it's a good idea. The police, they arrest you."
Josh paced around for a while, kicking the stones and gravel as he pondered the predicament. He wasn't prepared for this, and yet he should have been. He should have seen something like this coming. It was just the kind of unexpected hurdle that arose whilst embarking on a crazy adventure of this kind. There was really only one option available to him if he wanted to make the documentary a success. Dennis and Lance must have known this too, because they were still avoiding his gaze, fiddling with some tripods and lenses in an effort to make themselves invisible.
"There's only one thing for it," said Josh,
coming to a halt before his two cameramen.
"We need to get ourselves in there, get the golden footage we need, and then leave."
"What about the police?" said Lance. "You heard the girl."
"If the police come, we'll just act dumb."
"Act dumb?"
snapped Dennis, throwing his tripod down on the ground.
"You're talking about trespassing onto Vietnamese property. They'll..."
"Calm down, Dennis. It's an old hospital, for crying out loud. You make it sound like we're about to rob a bank or something. The council probably put this fence up for health and safety reasons, to stop kids from running around in there, that's all."
"I'm not doing it, Josh. And even if the police don't come, what about the person or thing we might find in there? Have you thought about that?"
"Have I thought about that?" screamed Josh. "Of course I've thought about that. That's why we're here. That's the sole reason we've been traveling across Southeast Asia for the last 2 months. Or did you not know that?"
"Fuck you, Josh," shouted Dennis. "There's only so much I can take."
"Suit yourself," said Josh, shaking his sweaty head. "Lance, what about you? Are you with me?"
Lance, the youngest of the three of them, looked down towards his feet.
"I'm sorry, Josh. I'm committed to this project, but I'm not willing to get arrested in a foreign country. I'm just not."
The words fell from the young man's mouth in a weak spill, like the utterance of a schoolboy shamefully turning down a dare.
"I see," spat Josh derisively. "Well, I suppose I'll have to go in there by myself. You two can wait out here and look pretty."
Walking over to the boot of the car to grab a camera bag, he added,
"Make sure you don't break a nail or anything."
"Come on, Josh," cried Dennis. "You're being unreasonable. You're obsessed over this thing."
Dennis never got a reply. Josh ignored his outburst and stormed off towards the fence with a camera bag slung over his shoulder, leaving all of them to watch on in disbelief. Nobody tried to stop him as he angrily tore up a corner of one of the fence posts, yanking it back and forth until a sizable gap had been created. Nor did anyone try to stop him as he painfully dragged himself through the gap on his hands and knees, ripping his shirt and trousers in the process. Moments later, once he was on the other side of the fence, he followed the exact path that the drifter wandered along on the video, disappearing around the back of the same crumbling structure
its cracked brickwork rising up from the dirt like a rotten, decaying tooth.
Obsessed? Yeah, too right I'm obsessed, thought Josh as he walked gingerly around the deserted medical facility. He'd been obsessed about this thing before it had even begun, obsessed after first hearing about the legend of the Drifter as a child in his primary school playground. Solving the mystery had turned into his main purpose in life, his ultimate ambition, and he certainly wasn't going to let a barbed wire fence stop him from doing it. It was getting later into the afternoon now, but the relentless tropical sun was still smothering the land like a humid blanket, scorching the cracked concrete edges of the various buildings. The atmosphere was eerie, mysterious, borderline miasmic, and Josh's senses were on overdrive as he nervously looked around. But apart from a few rats scurrying around and a steady trickle of cockroaches crawling over the empty beer cans and plastic bottles lining the curbs, there was no sign of life. Things changed when he turned a corner, however, creeping silently around the edge of a crumbling plastic security hut. There was a sudden shift in the air, a feeling that he was no longer alone, and the dry landscape heaved with tension. The main hospital building towered over him like an overgrown tombstone, and the setting sun shone through its empty window frames, creating bizarre, surreal shadows over the stony floor. These shadows stretched out before Josh like long, gray monoliths, the windows giving them a grid-like effect. It was in one of these shadows that Josh saw the first sign of movement. A shape passed across one of the square window frames on the ground, a silhouette crossing from one edge to the next, and the sight of it took his breath away. By counting the windows cast across the shadow, Josh calculated that whoever was in the hospital was up on the fourth floor. Did I just see the Drifter? An overwhelming wave of panic and fear took hold of Josh as he contemplated this question, as well as an impulse to leave. But leaving was absolutely out of the question, and he knew it. Not only was he in serious debt due to the expenses of the expedition, not only had he committed a ridiculous amount of time and effort traveling and preparing, but now he'd also pissed his two cameramen off in a big way. Redemption was the only way out of this mess, and an award-winning documentary was the thing he needed to pull it off. A prize-winning cult hit would pay off the debts, make all of the stress and hassle worthwhile, and win back the respect of his fellow crew members. Was he scared? Yes, he was terrified even. But so what? This was it. This was his moment. This was his dream. And he was doing it. Moving stealthily like a cat, he prepared to enter the hospital. The interior of the hospital was like a setting for a demented dream. Old-fashioned relics and artifacts of a time gone by sat in every crevice of every room and hallway, all covered in dead flies and dust. Metal trolleys with torn tablet boxes in their compartments sat beside stairwells. Bed frames with moldy mattresses occupied empty wards, and small storage cupboards here and there were filled with broken mops and half-disintegrated rubber gloves. Josh recorded all of this through the lens of his camera, working his way up the many floors with the device held up against his chest. Terror and trepidation rattled his bones and ignited his nerves, but he refused to give in to it. He was going to confront whoever or whatever lurked upstairs above him, no matter what the outcome may be. It was on the third floor that he began to hear noises. Light footsteps and shuffling started to echo down the concrete stairwell, a peculiar sound that permeated straight through to Josh's core. A voice seemed to accompany the sound, but the exact words were too distant and low to make out. This unsettling murmuring and shuffling continued as he climbed the filthy, littered staircase, and he followed it carefully. His earlier calculation had been right. The sound was emanating from the fourth floor of the building. It eventually led him to the open door of a dormitory, where he lingered for a moment whilst peering in. The long room was filled with intense rays of orange light as sunset penetrated through the remaining glass panels and empty frames, highlighting the spirals of dust and dirt that hung over the empty beds like miniature sandstorms.
At the far end of this rectangular room, behind what might have been an old doctor's desk, a hatted silhouette pranced up and down like a shadow puppet. Josh edged further into the room, his presence seemingly undetected or ignored, holding the camera at chest height. After a lifetime of searching and studying, he was now actually in the same room as the Drifter, and he had no idea what to say or think. The Drifter, on the other hand, showed no sign of discomfort. His incessant pacing and shuffling did not falter for 1 second with Josh now in the close vicinity. He simply continued to twist and gyrate in his elastic way, letting a new string of words flow from the neat crease of his mouth.
"Has it really come to this? Despite the planet's size, no nook or cave to sit and rest, to hide from prying eyes?"
The voice. The voice. It was like a needle that pricked the center of Josh's heart, the tainted echo of a damaged instrument. The camera had slipped from Josh's hands upon hearing it, but he hardly even noticed. For several minutes, he could do nothing but stare across at the partially obscured features hidden under the rim of the big hat, trying to decipher the meaning of the rhyme he'd just heard.
"What? What? What do you mean?"
he eventually said. Without breaking his graceful stride, the Drifter sang again.
"This globe of many wondrous things, I've sat and watched it grow. It started off so desolate, but now it's quite a show."
Taking another few steps into the room, passing along the rows of rusty bed frames on either side of him, Josh formulated his next response. "Who are you?"
"A splendid thing you ask of me, for sometimes I forget. It's been so long since I've been home, I sometimes have to guess."
The combination of the loose pacing, the rhyming dialogue, and the piercing voice was making Josh's head spin. It was like being in the presence of a tormented circus animal that had been locked away in a cramped cage for too long, or a trapped insect buzzing away under an upturned glass. It took a large amount of discipline and self-control for Josh to hold himself together and think clearly amongst this onslaught of insanity, but he persevered. "It's been so long since I've been home," he thought. "What could that mean?" Calling out again to the moving figure up in front of him, Josh said, "Where do you come from?" And then another tainted melody rang out across the room.
"My city is a distant speck, so far away from here. They banished me with no remorse and did not shed a tear."
The rays of sunlight cascading into the room made it hard to focus on the Drifter, but there was something else, too. His nimble, arachnid limbs were clouded by a mirage-like haze, making the edges of his form flicker and blur. Even his words seemed to lack solidity, undulating through the air before seeping into the listener's skin.
"So how long have you been here?"
asked Josh, straining his eyes through the dusty haze. The Drifter's rhythmic pacing altered at this question, and he began to gravitate towards the old wooden desk. Then, in one fluid motion, he scooped up a small item from its surface and tossed it over to Josh.
"There was a dirty, nasty war. It really was no fun. The soldiers sleeping in the dirt. They called it World War I.
An antique whiskey flask sat in Josh's outstretched palm, and he looked down at it in bemusement. Its metallic surface was scuffed and dented, worn with age, but before he could comment on it, another item was thrown over to him.
"I once bore witness to a time Caligula was king. The fights, the battles, and the deaths, a sight it did so bring."
Now he was gazing down at a small roaming coin that he'd caught, the inscriptions barely visible. The implications of it were crazy, but things were about to get even crazier.
"You want to go back further still? For that I can oblige. A token from an ancient past, all witnessed with these eyes."
With a graceful twist of the torso, the drifter hurled another small object over in Josh's direction, which he barely managed to catch. This one was a reptilian tooth, large and sharp at its tip.
"This beast I fought with my bare hands in the Mesozoic. I roamed the plains with ancient forms, mighty and heroic."
"Is this a dinosaur tooth?" asked Josh, his face now solemn and deadly serious. There was no reply to this, though. The drifter was off again on his maniacal pacing, his dizzy wandering of the room, his drifting. Josh was close to him now, only a few meters away, but he still couldn't make out any crystal clear details. It was like trying to focus on something through a rain-spattered window, or trying to read a page of a book just seconds after waking from a long, deep sleep. This continuous confusion and failure to understand what was going on made Josh snap.
"Look," he said. "How are you even here? How are you still alive?"
Like a gangly spider stumbling about in its web, the drifter paced and sang his reply.
"I broke the law on my own land and paid a hefty price. They dropped me down on this wet rock, then rolled the dice of life."
"Dropped you down on this wet rock?" Josh cried. "You're from another planet?"
"They wanted me to suffer hard throughout millennia, to live among the vicious forms from this panspermia."
This last word hovered around Josh's head, circling his brain. He'd heard it somewhere before, probably on the internet. Panspermia, he thought. Isn't that the theory that life on Earth came from another planet? He was pretty sure that it was, but he wasn't certain. Fortunately, the drifter had more to say.
"Before they brought me to this place, in a shiny vessel, they strapped me down onto a bed, injecting me with metal. Inside my body sits a sphere no bigger than a dime. Its function is a simple one, to bend and distort time."
Josh carefully placed the tooth and the rest of the items down on a bed beside him and tried very hard to get his head around what he was hearing. If all of this was to be believed, he was in the presence of someone who'd lived through millions, if not billions, of years, witnessing the evolution of planet Earth firsthand. A time dilation device sat inside his slim body somewhere, keeping him young as he traipsed across the eternal landscapes. And as for the panspermia comment, was he trying to tell Josh that his race planted the seed of life on Earth 4.6 billion years ago?
"Tell me more,"
cried Josh, determined to solve this torturous riddle.
"Tell me what you've experienced."
The drifter's haunting face stared out across the room from behind a thick sunbeam infused with dust, his pointy features lost in the glowing swirl. Then came a melody, a string of sounds that caused the hairs on Josh's neck and arms to turn endwise.
"For hundreds of eternities, I've walked the earth alone. I've scavenged things and pillaged things, and carved out many homes. The languages and dialects, I've seen and spoke them all. My eyes have seen 10 million suns. They rise, and then they fall. The population of this place is on a rapid rise, but I will always walk alone, and no one hears my cries."
For perhaps the first time ever, Josh was seeing the drifter not as a monster, but as a victim. It was clear now that time had rendered him insane, the decades, centuries, and millennia melting his brain into a tortured mush. Always an outsider, he wandered along the periphery of the societies and cultures that he saw come and go, trapped in his own bubble of existence. Regressed into his own head, he lived out his lonely days within the walls of his cranium, his thoughts and musings heard only by him, the outside world nothing but a transient, ever-changing backdrop that had no place for him. Maybe his rhyming talk was simply a way for him to occupy his mind, Josh thought, a distraction from the terrifying predicament that he found himself in. In the same way that an incarcerated man may develop eccentric, psychotic habits and rituals to pass the long hours in solitary confinement, the Drifter may have developed his own bizarre habits to pass the long millennia that he was trapped inside. But what about this talk of panspermia? Josh had to know more. What did you mean by panspermia? Did life on Earth come from another part of the universe?
This life that's all around you now, the life on planet Earth, it's all a big experiment, concocted and researched. My race came here with cells and genes to see if they would grow. But they could not just stick around to sit and watch the show. The evolution takes so long for things to take a hold. So I was left here, on my own, to watch the thing unfold.
But what was your crime? Asked Josh. Why did your people leave you here like this?
The crime that I was guilty of, that got me many years, was my affront to their big plan of planting life down here.
So there it was, the mystery that had sat in the background of Josh's life, as well as countless others, was now solved. The Drifter was a convict of his planet, sentenced to become an observer of an extraordinary biological project. The punishment for his crime of being opposed to the terraforming of Earth was to be left here alone to watch the evolutionary show unfold. But was his punishment eternal? Or would his race one day return to collect him and take him back to his distant city, wherever that was? Josh had neither the energy nor the willpower to find that one out. The atmosphere in the old hospital wing had become suffocating, the Drifter's strong presence adding a sickly weight to the air. His agony and torment radiated outwards from his restless body, his loneliness and isolation surrounding him like a magnetic field. It was time to leave. Without saying another word, Josh began to tiptoe back through the rows of empty beds, retreating to the doorway. The Drifter made no attempt to follow him. In fact, he didn't even notice him leaving. Josh was merely another shape in the transient landscape, another meaningless object that came and went, another blurred movement in his peripheral vision. There was one last shock for Josh before he left the room. Just a few feet away from the door, he lost his footing and almost dropped to the ground. He'd forgotten all about his camera, and he nearly stepped right on it. Once he'd steadied himself, he picked it up and cradled it in his arms like a comfort blanket, then got himself out to the stairwell as quickly as he could. To his emotionally distressed eyes, the building appeared to warp and distort around him as he hurled himself down the chipped stairs, the architecture bending and breathing like the arteries of a concrete heart. He could still hear the Drifters shuffling and murmuring as he reached the ground floor exit, the faint rhymes orbiting the edges of his consciousness, like the echoes or residue of an hallucinatory dream.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It took a while for Josh to navigate his way back out of the disused site. Stumbling around in a stupor, his bearings were all over the place. After stuffing the camera into his bag, he searched for the hole in the fence that he'd made earlier, but it was easier said than done. And once he'd gotten himself through the fence and away from the buildings, he was faced with a fresh problem. Everyone was gone. The area was deserted. As he stood there in a daze, head turning left and right for signs of life, all he could see was an empty patch of gravel where the 4x4 was previously parked. Dennis and Lance were nowhere to be seen. Neither were Nagun and Duck. Paranoid thoughts instantly began to surface in his mind. Had the police turned up? Had there been some kind of accident? Were they also pissed off at my decision to enter the hospital? They simply left me to my own devices? Things didn't improve when he took his phone out of his pocket to make a call, either. There was no signal, no data, nothing. He'd purchased a new SIM card upon his arrival into the country. Had it run out of credit already? Effectively stranded in a small corner of Saigon, all he could really think of doing was to walk back the way he'd come, following the roads that Dennis had driven down on the way out here. If he could get himself out to the main road again, he could try to hail a cab and get back to Duck's house. With any luck, they might all be there waiting for him. The sky had grown very dark, the palm trees and empty shops lining the river discernible only as faint outlines, but he made it back out to the main road easily enough. There was a strange disorientation gripping him now, however, and everything around him seemed altered and unfamiliar. Houses passed by that he didn't remember seeing on the way out, and even some of the bikes and cars on the road were peculiar looking and sounded too quiet. One of these slick, silent cars pulled over for him when he stuck out his hand, though, and it came as quite a relief. The offside door slid open on its own, and the driver, a middle-aged cabbie, waved him in. Flopping down in the passenger seat, a dazzling array of miniature screens and luminous buttons screamed out at him from the dashboard, and the driver had to call out to him twice to get his attention.
Sorry, Josh mumbled, fumbling around in confusion. Can you take me to...
It soon became apparent that communication was going to be quite hard, so he just pointed a finger in the direction he remembered the house being in and attempted to direct the driver en route. And surprisingly enough, it worked. About 20 minutes later, the small alley that the house was on came into view, and things were looking promising. But then, it went strange again. The driver didn't seem to like Josh's money, despite it all being Vietnamese dong. The colorful banknotes first made the cabbie smile and chuckle to himself. But then, when Josh persisted and made it clear that this was how he was seriously intending to pay for the ride, the man's smile transmogrified into an angry scowl. Tapping his finger impatiently against a card reader on the elaborate dashboard, he demanded some kind of digital currency. There was a flurry of shouted obscenities from the driver, and Josh was eventually pushed out of the car. A few seconds later, the cabbie sped off down the small road in a huff. It wasn't an ideal turnout by any means, but at least he was back at the house now. Walking over to the sliding metal gate, he peered in at the cluster of houses, then entered the small estate. To his horror and dismay, he noticed that even Duck's house looked different than it did earlier, the paintwork and corrugated roof constituting a different design. How could this be? He tapped on the front door a couple of times and waited. A few seconds later, a young man answered who looked completely unfamiliar, as well as hostile.
Bai Gao, Maimun Kai Gi, he said.
Peering over the man's shoulder into the house, the entire layout of the living room looked different, the furniture of a completely different design.
What the hell's going on here? I don't like this.
Josh had no idea what the man had said, but he was pretty sure it wasn't good. He'd never seen him before, and even the neighbors and the surrounding houses looked unfamiliar too. Sensing trouble on the horizon, he made a swift exit from the small estate and walked back out towards the main road. There was a concrete bridge next to the road, and he stopped by it, taking a few minutes to gather himself and decide what he was going to do. He was alone in a foreign country, had no vehicle, his money appeared to be useless, and on top of that, he appeared to be losing his mind. Was this really happening? Was he dreaming? The encounter with the drifter in the derelict hospital already seemed like a sketchy dream rather than reality, so he couldn't rule it out. Remembering that the camera was in his bag, he took it out to see what had been recorded. The device came alive easily enough, despite having been dropped, and within seconds, the rectangular screen lit up to reveal its usual symbols and functions. He pressed play. Shaky images of the crumbling stairwell began to play out, confirming that the experience had been real, and then things were reinforced even further when the drifter's dark silhouette came into view. The entire sequence of events played out as they should have, the scene crashing and shaking as the camera was dropped to the floor, but there was a huge anomaly that caused Josh's eyes to widen as he watched the screen. The date and time. Was he seeing this correctly? Or had he damaged the camera when he dropped it? Something was wrong, because the display date and time read 20:42 p.m. 7:2:82. Pulling his phone out again, he checked the time on there. His heart did a cartwheel inside his chest, then a somersault for good measure. The same thing was showing on his mobile phone, 20:42 p.m. 7:2:82. There were two possible explanations that Josh could see. Either both of his devices were faulty, displaying the same incorrect date and time for some unknown technical reason, or 60-odd years had passed by while he was in the hospital. The former was more likely, of course, and more desirable, but bearing in mind the altered state of his surroundings, coupled with his awkward experiences with the cab driver and the man at the house, the latter was looking much more like the truth. Had the Drifter's time bubble distorted his own timeline? Had he strayed too close to the spherical device mentioned in one of his rhymes? He couldn't believe it. He didn't want to believe it. But yet, he had to. So, what was he to do now? Hitch a ride to the airport? Try and catch a flight home? After a quick calculation in his head, he worked out that both of his parents were probably long dead by now, along with most other distant relatives. And as for Dennis and Lance, even if they were still alive, they'd be octogenarians, old and frail and tucked away in some cozy nursing home somewhere. Maybe they'd remember him. Maybe they wouldn't. Dark thoughts. Dark thoughts indeed. A strong impulse to move suddenly washed over him, a desire to just walk into the night in an effort to distract himself from the terrible predicament he found himself in. He was now a lost soul wandering along the periphery of society, a forgotten face from another era. The legend of the Drifter had been Josh's main obsession for as long as he could remember, and solving the mystery had become his main purpose in life. Now, not only had he solved the mystery, he'd also become a Drifter himself. An outsider destined to roam, traipse, and drift through a lonely existence. You've been listening to The Drifter by James Flynn. James Flynn grew up in England. His stories cross the boundaries of horror, sci-fi, and sci-fi horror. An absurdist at heart, Flynn's tales tend to highlight the many paradoxes and predicaments that come attached to the human existence. Flynn's work has been featured in several magazines and podcasts, most notably Black Petals Magazine, Yellow Mama Magazine, The Scare Room Podcast, and Weird Mask Magazine. When he's not writing, James Flynn can sometimes be found rummaging through shelves in secondhand bookstores, or wandering aimlessly through the streets of the secret city in which he now lives. Now, don't you see what you're missing? The Drifter can dance. The Drifter can sing. The Drifter comes bearing gifts. Don't you feel bad for missing him? Well, I suppose it can be forgiven this once, but if you're not here the next time he shows up, it'll probably be best if I just send him straight to your home. Thanks to James Flynn for tonight's story. I tip my hat to you, James, if you'll pardon the pun. Also, my thanks go out to all of you, dear listeners, for joining me. As always, there will be more Horror Hill next week. So until then, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com and we can talk details. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.